With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Bannering the Blue Shirts. My name is Tom Rich Jr., and as always, I'm joined by Mike Murphy. Mike, how's it going today?
Hey, Tom. First time, long time. Doing this show through the telephone today because the internet is garbage for me. I also think I called you Time instead of Tom there. So this show is already off to a great start. If there's audio quality issues, it's my fault, which is to say my internet provider's fault, and they're all a monopoly that none of us can escape, so really it's everyone's fault. We have a lot to talk about, Tom.
We do, more so than when we try to do this show earlier, which works out for us.
Yeah, there's a whole... I only just saw what Uncle Bob is tweeting about. It must have dropped his margarita for that one. Jesus Christ, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting. So he has this tweet thread, Bob McKenzie, who, you know, he's supposed to be like taking a step back and really only focusing on like draft stuff, but he sends out this tweet thread. Imagine my surprise when I started making calls today and heard Jack Eichel trade rumors, including unverified chatter. He may have at some point recently requested a trade out of Buffalo and that NYR were amongst interested teams. This, of course, required further investigation. None of those talks with other clubs resulted in Eichel trade traction, but it's also believed that there's been dialogue between Eichel and Buff to ensure that they both want the same thing, to get better, obviously, and share the same timetable sooner rather than later. So the face value review appears as follows. Eichel doesn't want out of Buff. Buff doesn't want to trade Eichel. Move along, nothing to see here. Fair enough. But some rumors are worth checking out, mentioning, which I've now done. Now, back to draft prep. So this obviously throws the whole timeline into a tizzy for numerous reasons. Like, the Rangers obviously need help long-term in their center depth. They have a lot of money coming off the books next year. Nika Zibanejad is a free agent in 2 years. So, you know, Jack Eichel's young. David Quinn coached him. So it's obviously a really easy connection to make for the Rangers and Sabres. But, like, you know, people have tweeted about, and I'm sure you'll agree, Buffalo probably would want a whole lot, you know, probably starting with the number one pick in this draft, you know, Capo Caco, among other things. So I think it's fun to like play, you know, EA Sports general manager, ooh, Jack Eichel to the Rangers. But for now, it's like, okay, this is a cool thing to talk about, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, it is fun and cool to talk about, especially because Jack Eichel, in my opinion, is, you know, if I was building a team from scratch, you would be on the very short list of like the top 10 guys I would want to do it around. He's that good. He's been really, really good with not a lot around him in Buffalo, although they paid Jeff Skinner so much money to play with him. And yeah, it's interesting. Of course, Buffalo also just got former New York Rangers legend Tom Eric Staal in a trade with Minnesota for Marcus Johansson, where I don't know what Minnesota was thinking. I mean, they're probably like, everyone was making fun of us because we're old. Let's trade one of the old guys to get a slightly less old guy. And good grief. But yeah, it's interesting to say at least, especially because the other major news that happened since the last time we recorded, we had a couple of failed launches with the show today because of my internet issues. But you and I, we thought we were going to be talking about Henrik Lundqvist buyout for this week's show. And instead, we're talking about Mark Stahl being traded. Mark Stahl's tenure in New York is over. You and I'm not going to pretend we didn't have this conversation where we have to walk through and pretend like, remember when I said, did you expect this, Tom? And you said you were surprised. Like, we're not going to do that. We were both surprised by the trade, as I think everyone was, because there wasn't a lot of smoke here. It just happened, right? There's a report, and then it became confirmed and official. Rangers gave up Mark Stahl, addition by subtraction. They don't have to buy him out this way. It's a cap done trade. They give up a second round pick in 2021. And Detroit under Steve Yzerman now has, I think, 3 second rounders in this year's draft and 3 second rounders in 2021. So
he's loading
they
up.
Loading up on picks and prospects. And that's the right thing to do. Remember, this was where the Rangers were not, you know, like pretty much yesterday. So, it's very interesting to think of this world of a post Mark Stahl New York Rangers for a lot of reasons. I mean, we're all bracing ourselves for post Henrik Lundqvist New York Rangers, which frankly, probably still going to happen, right, Tom?
Yeah.
We don't like almost to talk about it, but it's, that shit's happening. So get your boxes of tissues ready and, you know, eat an entire bowl of popcorn. The long story short is $5.7 million in cap goes away, and the Rangers have an open spot on the left side of the blue line, which, you know, is not bad news, especially because, you know, Keandre Miller, question mark, although I think it's more likely he gets seasoning in Hartford, but who the hell knows? We don't even know when the season starts, right? So there's so much to digest here, Tom, but you and I had a couple of talks about Mark Stahl danger. And like, you asked me to do this for one of the shows that didn't record, so I'm going to turn the tables on you and be clever. For those who maybe are younger fans, what was Mark Stahl in his prime like?
Mark Stahl in his prime was very interesting. The one thing that I'll remember the most is tremendous skater in the sense of there were like when we think of Mark Stahl's tenure at the end, he obviously had the reputation of being a staunch shutdown defender, and people will cite when the team was in its heyday, him and Girardi against Alex Ovechkin or Sidney Crosby, or you take your pick. But Stahl wasn't always that. He was a defender who he had more. You can look it up on YouTube. A number of interesting end-to-end rushes of him scoring a goal and his ability to just take the puck from his own end, take it all the way up the ice and score. One against the Florida Panthers sticks out. I'll remember his game-winning goal against Washington, the most famous or one of the most famous sequences with Rangers trail Washington. Joel Ward takes a double minor with 7 seconds left in regulation on the power play. Brad Richards scores to tie the game. Game goes to overtime. And then on one of the ensuing faceoffs, they made note that Mark Stahl and I forget who else was on the opposite point. Basically, they switched sides to set up the ability for them to be on one-timer situations. And the faceoff is won back, and Stahl just steps into it and he scores. There were a lot of great moments with Mark Stahl, and it's a shame. And Larry Brooks wrote about it today, and part of the article I'll get into after this, but he's concussed on a hit by his brother, Eric. It was, you know, just a weird situation that obviously, you know, his brother is not going to, you know, try to concuss his brother. And then obviously later on he takes, you know, the shot to the eye, and it was just a calamity of events that really diminished Stahl's tenure at the end. But there were really a lot of good moments. And for those who, you know, subscribe, whether it's to Evolving Hockey or, you know, Hockey Viz or any of the advanced stat sites, you know, I would take a look at some of the earlier times of Mark Stahl versus the last few years, because you'll really say to yourself, wow, this guy was once, you know, really good and capable of this level of play. It's obviously a shame how things ended, but definitely, you know, look at some of the earlier, you know, Mark Stahl highlights, because for a long time, he was a really good player. And I know we all, like, you know, joked about or, you know, criticized, you know, his play at the end. But this was the most tenured, you know, leader in terms of wearing a letter, been on the team very long time, drafted in 05, but, yeah, it's certainly, the end of an era, and he finishes with 999 career games, both, playoffs and regular season combined. So one short of 1,000, which is certainly, an achievement for, Mark Stahl.
Yeah. It's crazy to think just in terms of regular season, he has 892. So 892 games. He was the longest tenured Ranger. You know, obviously Lundqvist, would be before him, I was about to say next, but now the longest tenured Ranger is Chris Kreider at 523 games. There's a lot of hundreds between those two numbers, Tom. There's 300 games between those two numbers. And like you said, Mark Stahl was, you know, obviously a big defender. You know, like you said, he had this powerful stride. He was never a points guy. He only had two seasons where he cracked 25 points. But that wasn't really his game. Like, the Rangers knew what they were getting with him. This guy who had a great, you know, had a lot of a big area of influence on the ice because of his reach and the way he took the body. And like, the Rangers having Stahl and Girardi, like, I will never, for as long as I live, forget watching Stahl and Girardi try to slow down Ovechkin and, you know, the Capitals and Sid and the Penguins as those teams and those guys were emerging to be the generational superstars they have become, and, you know, the first ballot Hall of Famers they've become. And the Rangers, for a very long time, you know, before, you know, the hockey gods dealt a very cruel hand to Mark Stahl, had a guy who was, you know, really, really good. Like, you can even look at Stahl's contract, you know, and, you know, $5.7 million is what comes off the cap. But, like, even thinking about when he signed that deal, you could have made a case for him deserving more, really. Because of how good he was, when he was in his prime and the sort of player he was. But now we have, like, you know, there's a void. And there's going to be an even bigger void, when the hammer falls on Lundqvist and the aftermath of that. And now we have a situation where the Rangers have much more cap space, potentially a ton more cap space than we were expecting. And the Rangers are going to create cap space, Tom, and there are a lot of teams who are not going to be thrilled with the idea of spending up to the cap because of the financial implications of COVID. And the Rangers, and like the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Rangers are a team that isn't afraid to throw money around, as evidenced by the crazy signing bonus laden contract they were able to give Artemi Panarin, right? Like, this is something the Rangers could do, is find answers outside of the organization, as well as, you know, investigate maybe with a little more gumption, a little more earnest in their efforts to really look at extending Tony D'Angelo or you know, keeping a guy like Jesper Foss around. I think now I would really be shocked if that doesn't happen just because of the question of, you know, a leadership presence, a guy who's had, you know, the letter on his sweater for a long time. Kostal has been a leader in this locker room for a very long time. So it would be crazy. You know, how crazy would it be for this team to lose Jesper Foss, Mark Stahl, and Henrik Lundqvist? Like, in terms of the leadership group, that would be, especially, like, even what you said, like, you think of, like, Mika Zibanejad emerging, but he's only under contract for two more years. It's a potential huge shift here in terms of not just the history of the Rangers, but the culture of the team, right?
Yeah, it certainly makes it interesting what direction they'll ultimately decide to go in for, if they're going to name a captain for next season. But they're definitely going to have to they're going to be redistributing letters for sure based on who we expect to leave. Right now it's only Stahl, or rather Stahl is now gone. If Foss goes, that would leave Zibanejad with an A and Kreider with an A as, you know, permanent parts of the leadership group. I think it's interesting the move happens now, because you would think that, okay, what's the timing of the move for Stahl? Would it suggest that a deal is imminent, you know, or is it something like, you know, they're going to be signing Tony D'Angelo to a bridge? I don't know. It's something that could possibly happen between now and the start of the draft in a week. But if I were the Rangers, given the nature of the flat cap, I wouldn't sign anyone right now. I would, you know, do my due diligence and obviously, you know, tendering, contracts for qualifying purposes to the RFAs that you want to keep. But I really think that there's going to be a lot of players who are sort of in that middle ground where they have a high qualifying offer, but they've not quite lived up to the expectation that the teams has for them. So because of the flat cap, you'll have these RFAs who are unqualified, and then they will become, you know, unrestricted free agents. I certainly think the Rangers are a team that could be active during the draft for teams that are looking to shed salary, or even if the Rangers want to use some of that space and help facilitate deals. I had tweeted about this for the purposes of avoiding a Lundqvist buyout. I would try and give him the opportunity to say, hey, Hank, where is the spot that you would want to end up? And then you have a team like the Ottawa Senators, who has all of this cap space, and even more so now after buying up Bobby Ryan, where you can literally trade Hank at full price or at 50% to a team. Then that team can then flip him to a third team with salary retention. So for the 1 year, you have a team getting Hank at, you know, 25% of his cost. And then it helps a team like Ottawa, who they're looking to get to the cap floor, but they don't want to pay a lot in salary. But according to Brooks's article, he fully expects the team to still buy out Lundqvist to give the team and Hank resolution to start everything with a clean slate. And that would give them about $23 million in cap space. So it's certainly an interesting time. And, you know, tonight's game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final, and Tampa Bay is looking to, you know, put the Dallas Stars away. But I assume that once the final is wrapped up, you're going to start having more of these, hypotheticals and conversations with teams. But it's certainly an interesting time in the NHL and in Rangers land.
Yeah, it's also worth mentioning Hank's total salary for the last season of his contract. The season coming up is a $1 million signing bonus and a total salary of $5.5 million. So for teams that, you know, might balk at his cap hit, his actual salary is $3 million less than his AAV. And it's interesting, like a team like Ottawa, we just heard, you know, they're not going to bring back Craig Anderson. So you know, I don't think they would just want to kick one old guy out the door to bring in another old guy, but they also probably would be like, we'd be able to sell tickets for Lundqvist. I don't know. There's a lot to look into, but it's an interesting time. But the point you raise about if you can't avoid a buyout for Lundqvist, you have to do it, right? Like, even though buying him out in makes it as cool as it can be, this is not the end of the world. You know, I mean, like, you should look into it if you can move him. But if there's no way to do it in terms of finding a team that can take him on, because it's tough. But the good news is there's a lot of teams now who, even if they have a goalie, they might want a 1A, 1B situation. And Henrik Lundqvist, you know, if you are getting him at like 50% retained and he's your 1B, in case you're a little unsure about a goalie you have, if there's a team that has the cap space, it's very fun and very interesting, right? But like you said, the hypotheticals are going to begin in earnest after we get our resolution on the cup, whether it's Tampa tonight or whether it's, you know, this goes to game 7 and then, you know, Dallas or Tampa from there. But it's a crazy time because, you know, we've been all waiting, obviously, with the first overall pick in the draft and, you know, the questions are just having free agency and Henrik's pending buyout. There's all these balls up in the air for the Rangers. And now we all are like, all right, well, we have an idea of what the juggling routine is going to look like with these balls. And then all of a sudden, you know, things get that much more interesting. It's like someone's doing a juggling routine with Pen, and then we traded Mark Stahl. And now it's like, all right, well, we're going to throw a toaster oven. You have to juggle that as well, because it just opens a whole new dynamic of what you can do with this cap space. Like, you know, the thing I keep wondering about is, do the Rangers find a second line center, or, you know, even a first line center if they can with cap space to create and a little hesitant to sign a guy long term. If contract negotiations get rocky, the Rangers can be like, hey, let's look into this. You know, there's also the question of, you know, do the Rangers want to look at the future of Jacob Trouba here? And I am inclined to believe they won't do that. I think the organization likes him a lot, but, you know, I really didn't expect things to deteriorate the way they did with Kevin Shattenkirk, who, of course, you know, is a win away from winning a Stanley Cup with former Rangers captain Ryan McDonagh as his defensive partner, which is the irony there, Tom, never ceases to be delicious, because that was the defensive pair we all thought we would see. And now we get to see it in Tampa. But it's a really, like you said, it's a really interesting time. Before we get any further down that road, were you good with the price of just giving up a second round pick for Stahl? Because, you know, we've seen other trades for salary dumps, like the one I think that will come to most people's mind is Marlowe, and, you know, got like, but a lot of like, do the salary dump to a team that's willing to buy him out, like, you know, like a Brooks War pick situation, things like that. But was a second round pick a price you can live with to create this cap space, or do you really want to see what they do with it first?
I think that a second rounder next year isn't a terribly steep price to pay, especially if the goal is for the team to get better. So you're looking at something that's hopefully towards the end of the second round. The only problem it presents is if the Rangers wanted to use offer sheets, which I guess they don't plan on using offer sheets, because you would need a second round pick for compensation. I know that there's a couple of tiers that they could still, you know, do offers, but you're looking at
that. Anything that requires a second round pick, they're sure out of luck now.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, to get, you know, $5.7 million in cap space, which you know, it's much needed, whether it's just to re-sign the or to be flexible with other teams. I mean, I'm okay with it. Like I forget who tweeted it, but there's basically draft picks sort of have a, like a monetary value, you know, in terms of cap space. And in this case, like the Rangers came out ahead, you know, of what you would generally pay. Cause like, I think for the, what was it? When the Sharks traded Marlowe, I want to say what he was like 6.5 million or 6 million against the cap.
Yeah. Something in that neighborhood. Yeah.
And they gave up a first. So, for pretty much as big a contract, for a second rounder. Yeah. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I am too. Like, in the context of everything, like the Rangers, like you and I, especially, I think you and I were probably two of the last in the Rangers world about how, you know, I was trying everything to talk the Rangers off the cliff of the Kevin Shattenkirk buyout, especially because, Jesus Christ, the dead cap space penalty for next season is, you know, 6.1 million in dead cap, which means, all told, from Spooner and Girardi, the Rangers have 7.5 in dead cap next season. And that's that plus the cap not going up makes a deal like this look really nice. Like I would feel a lot more confident knowing what they end up doing with that cap space. Like I hope it doesn't turn into a 4-year deal for Ryan Strom, Tom, but, I feel like it was a reasonable price to pay. It's also worth mentioning, of course, in 2021, the Rangers have 2/3. Their other third is Buffalo from the Jimmy Vesey trade, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. I remember Jimmy Vesey, who, for those who didn't keep track, he just had a god-awful year in Buffalo, which is just kind of par for the course when you go to Buffalo. But it's a very interesting dynamic that this creates, and it was a reasonable, you know, price to pay. You know, I think with something like this, so long as it isn't a first, it does for the Rangers, considering how tight they are against the Caps, they only have to give up a second, is a pretty damn good deal. And you know, it'll be weird. And we get the sense that Detroit is going to play Mark Stahl, which is something, but, cause I know they're not bringing back a bunch of their D. I think they're not bringing back Daly. And of course, you know, they traded Mike Green, but, to Edmonton, but he retired. So that defense is a lot of old guys, but, this opens a lot of opportunities for the Rangers to really make a move that greatly enforces the team, and, you know, kind of galvanizes the roster as it stands now and addresses areas of need. It also creates that vacuum, right, on the left side of the defense. And really the thing that stands out to me the most is even last year and the year before when, you know, last year we finally saw Stahl kind of get, you know, in his first year with Coach Quinn, Stahl just didn't end up in the doghouse, whereas Shattenkirk did. And it was very much like, why are these things different, right? One of these things is not like the other. This is not a level field of assessment and evaluation of how these players are playing. But even this past season, Stahl was out there all the time on the PK. So I'm very curious about what happens with, you know, the Rangers penalty killing moving forward. I would imagine we're going to see a whole shitload of Ryan Lindgren on the left side of that penalty kill. And, you know, the other thing here, Tom, is are Brendan Smith's days of being a fourth line right winger finally over?
I gotta imagine.
Yeah, because, you know, after the Shea trade, he was on, you know, quote unquote, the first pair with Trouba, right? And then, now we have Brendan, like there's a void on the left side. The Rangers only have so many D, and Keandre Miller, you know, might not be ready, but even if he is, we still only have so many D here. So is Brendan Smith a defenseman again?
if I'm the Rangers, my goal, if they are keeping Smith, the goal with him is how can we rebuild his value? How can we use him in a way that helps him, helps the team? Because he has that like reputation and, you know, is someone, because I think back to when the Rangers acquired him in the first place and, you know, his play in the playoffs against Montreal with Brady Shea. I'm just looking at the playoffs this year and the amount of teams who have had injuries to their defense and are resorting to, you know, rookies or, you know, players with not a lot of experience. And with him in the last year of his deal, like he's the perfect fringe defender to acquire at 50%. So like if you're the Rangers, you rebuild his value and the next trade deadline, it's like, all right, yeah. Who needs a Brendan Smith who can, you know, be your sixth or seventh defenseman. And, you know, in a pinch, he can slot in on the fourth line.
Yeah. What the hell? There's not a lot of those. Not a lot of those guys left anymore. I don't know if you folks know that. I'm reading the Down Goes Brown history of the NHL, and I was cracking up in the very early days of the NHL. There's a position called the Rover, which is, you know, you just played, you just went wherever the hell you wanted. And I was like, oh, sounds like a spiritual successor to what Brendan Smith went through. But I wrote his report card for Banter, and I remembered he was a healthy scratch for three consecutive games, and then we traded Brady Shea, and then Smith came back to the lineup and immediately played like 18 minutes and 44 seconds on the top pair with Jacob Trouba. Like, you just can't make it up. Yeah, you're not good enough to be on the defense, Brendan. I'm sorry. Brendan, here's the thing. Brady, because he wasn't good enough, and now we're in a real pickle, but it's really interesting to me how this plays out now, because there's another big piece out of the way for, you know, for Keandre Miller's future, but also Libor Hayek, I would imagine, is going to get another look. And I think, you know, as things progress here, you know, it's still too early to call this like, oh boy, what's Libor Hayek ever going to be? But he has a huge opportunity, or potentially will have a huge opportunity here, Tom. And that's also worth talking about, because the future of this defense is different. Not only do we have Mark Stahl gone, but of course Lindy Ruff's gone. So, and that's why all this is really interesting to me, beyond even just the cap space and what that means. Like, do the Rangers make a big run at adding a huge piece? And, you know, do they say, you know what, we like Tony D'Angelo, headaches and all, even though, you know, we have down the right side, we're good for forever, and we have Nils Lundqvist, who, you know, 1 year from now, I'm sure we'll be talking about him being ready to be in the NHL just because he's doing another year of seasoning in the Swedish Elite League. So Nils Lundqvist is probably ready for the NHL right now, you know, but in a year's time, I would imagine he's ready to really be in the NHL. So it's interesting how all these pieces are moving now. It makes it so, while we're all buzzing about, like, holy shit, Alexi Lafreniere is going to happen, there's also all this, well, the Hank bio is going to happen. And it's like a bunch of dominoes we're watching slowly teeter and totter, getting ready to fall. And we're all getting ready to dissect what all this means and what happens. But it's a fascinating time to watch this team, because, good God, like, this team could be so different just on paper from what they were last year, where they kind of succeeded despite themselves and their weaknesses. And, you know, not only can you make a very strong case that, you know, the Stahl move is addition by subtraction in terms of what you're doing with that cap space, but also, frankly, the quality of the defense. You know, it's no secret what Mark Stahl's underlying numbers were. You know, and of course the Rangers still have plenty of scapegoats in terms of guys who really have really tough underlying numbers. You know, Kaapo Kakko, of course, had a historically rough season measuring analytically for a rookie, and then you have Brett Howden. So it's crazy to think about what happens next. What do you want them to do, Tom, with that money?
So before we get to what I would like them to do with the money, I think now is a good spot for an ad break, because after that, I have my thoughts, and then I want your opinion on something that Larry wrote today. So we will be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thanks, everyone. You're listening to Bannering the Blue Shirts. We are back from the ad break. Beforehand, Mike was asking me, you know, what would I like the Rangers to do with the cap space? My thoughts on this, I want them to, for now, conserve that cap space until some of the landscape is a little more known, with other restricted free agents and other teams that are looking to get some money out of the their internal budget. But if they certainly will have a lot of options if everything, you know, well, let me better put it this way. Even if all the other major teams find a way to deal with their situations, like looking at Tampa for one, you know, with all the players that they have, who, you know, depending on whether or not they win the Stanley Cup, could certainly impact the direction they will go in. You know, if those Eichel rumors that, like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, are to believe, it would suggest to me that the Rangers are thinking long-term at center, which means that they're not going to go very long with Ryan Strom. So if they do sort of the Kevin Hayes thing, where it's one-year deal that takes you to unrestricted free agency, I'd be fine with that. D'Angelo, I think bridge deal, because A, it doesn't tie you down. You know, it gives you options if you want to bring Nils over, because the wild card in all of this is we don't know when the next season is going to start. If it starts in January, if it starts in February, who's to say that at that point they don't bring him over to North America? He's in Hartford for a little bit, and then he's just so good that you want to promote him. But if I were taking this cap space, I would say we're going to set aside of it for a true number one left-hand defenseman who solidifies that, and it takes pressure off someone like Keandre, takes someone pressure off of, you know, these are players who are a little bit away, like a Zach Jones or a Matthew Robertson. But you have this potential there, but you don't want it to be a thing of, you know, these have to be the saviors, that they can just make the team at their leisure.
Yeah, so maybe not Alex Petrino, who's likely going to hit the open market from what it looks like, although, you know, he's a bona fide, I don't know, he's a right side, never mind, I'm an idiot. It would still be fun, though, why not one more right-sided D, but yeah. But you, that is your opinion, is they should, that's what you want them to do with the money, is one, be careful, right? Mm-hmm. And then two is address the left side with some more stability.
Yeah, because, like, if I were to wait, like, I still think the Barkov situation in Florida is a fascinating situation to watch. Him 2 years away from UFA status, he's only making $5.9 million now. I would imagine that based on Florida having an internal budget, they're losing some more than likely to lose, you know, Hoffman and Dadonov. It's going to be hard for them to build a team that will make him want to stay. So if he's
twice that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but if you're the Rangers and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, then that opportunity is available and then you're not able to act on it.
Yeah. It's really interesting because for me, this comes in like, how confident am I in Ryan Lindgren?
Yes.
And you know what? I'm pretty confident, but I also am much more confident in how strong the right side is that I won't sweat it so much if there's, you know, we have Ryan Lindgren and then a bunch of kids trying to prove themselves because, you know, Smith's only here for one more year and then that's over and done with. So that is, you know, that's another spot on the left side that's going to open up. And then you have, like, who's there that's proven in the NHL? It's Ryan Lindgren. That's who we have on the left side now, Tom, because Brady Shea is gone and Mark Stahl is gone. And, you know, a couple of years ago, Ryan McDonough is gone. And that's crazy. All these pieces have fallen, right? But I lean more towards I love Filipino. But I want the security of another center. And, like, I don't think it would be a crime to have Hedl move to wing or, you know, or have Hedl just be a really, really awesome third-line center because, frankly, teams that have really awesome third-line centers tend to win a lot of hockey games. So, I'd like for the Rangers to go from the team that had, you know, one center who can play a 200-foot game and play and produce in the top six level, in other words, Mika Zibanejad, to have that situation improved. But, yeah, there's a lot. There's so much to think about here. It does interest me, though, because it does feel like there's just so many pieces moving on that blue line. It wouldn't surprise me if they look into adding something on that left side, especially I would, you know what, Tom, there's all these questions I would love to have answers to. I would love to know what the organization thinks of Libor Hájek right now. Like,
yeah,
that is a huge question to answer because if they're still high on him, then they might be telling themselves, like, let's just go ahead and pencil Libor Hájek in for next season. And we have Keandre and Hartford and yada, 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 right? But goddamn, like if Libor Hájek doesn't pan out, all of a sudden at the end of next season, you have, you know, who you have. You have Ryan Lindgren, and if Libor Hájek's not an NHL, and then you have AHL, you have a real need for some stability on that left side. Even if the right side is as strong as it is, and, you know, it's really strong, especially if the Rangers re-sign D'Angelo, but even if they don't sign D'Angelo, they have Nils Lundqvist coming up. So, like, there's plenty of reasons to be confident about the right side of the blue line. The left side of the blue line is just, it's a goddamn mystery now. And, you know, it was, to some extent, it was going to be a mystery regardless because of, you know, Mark Stahl was also coming off the books after next season, but, like, this just kind of accelerates that a little bit, you know what I mean, in terms of finding out what we have with a guy like Libor Hájek, really testing Ryan Lindgren even more. And that's why I'm so fascinated about where the organization stands on Libor Hájek as a prospect, as a player who's capable of playing, you know, is he ready to be a second pair defenseman in the NHL?
Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
I'm going to go ahead with a no here. And, you know, just the other day I cracked up in the banter Slack and I was looking at, like, you know, the blue line you could make from defensemen who are very recently Rangers, right? Like, you have Ryan Graves. You have, you have Ryan McDonough. You have Kevin Shattenkirk. You have Keith Yandle. You have Neil Pionk. And, you know, like, Billy Keane.
Anton Strowman.
Anton Strowman. Like all those guys that have moved on and either reestablished or reestablished themselves elsewhere. Wouldn't it be nice, Tom, to have Orion Graves right now? Gosh,
yeah,
it would be nice.
That would be really helpful. It would be helpful
would
to have.
It would be so nice to have Orion Graves right now, and really, no one really talks about it, which is hysterical, because the Rangers gave him up for nothing. He was a captain of the Wolfpack at the time, and they just said, you know what, let's trade you for Chris Bigras, and then let's not even give Chris Bigras a qualifying offer and let him become a UFA, and he was with the Adirondack Phantoms, you know, the Flyers AHL affiliate, and I don't even know what happened with him this year, but just it's crazy to think of what they let slip through their fingers there. And, you know, Neil Pionk on just a terrible, god-awful Winnipeg Jets blue line looked a lot better than he did with the Rangers. And that had a lot of us kind of second-guessing what some of the underlying numbers told us, but it also had a lot of us looking at Lindy Ruff and being like, Jesus Christ, what is this guy potentially doing to the development of these young defensemen? And that's another reason why all this is that much more spicy and interesting, is what we have in place with what's going to happen with the development of these young guys. Like, is this, how much of the development of Libor Hayek has already been kind of derailed or spoiled to some extent? Not only by, you know, the situations he's been in, but also injury, remember, with him. So, and then of course you have Igor Rykov, who is back in Russia. And I don't, like, in terms of he's going to be, I don't think any of us really expect him to land in the NHL anytime soon now. So it's a crazy time to look at that blue line. And now to have Bob McKenzie throw out just like, oh, by the way, the Rangers were talking about Jack Eichel. And yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and then you have Larry Brooks talking about, you know, maybe the Rangers re-sign D'Angelo and play him on the left with Fox, pair Lion Lindgren with Jacob Trouba, and if they're looking for a veteran to play either side on a one-year depth deal, maybe they should talk to 39-year-old Ron Hainsey.
Yeah, that's going to work. Remember when we traded for Adam McQuaid? I remember that.
Or way back when we got Roman Hammerlick.
Oh, my God. Hammer skates Hammerlick. Yeah, it's looking at how, you know, for those who don't know, you know, Handanus, you can play on your off wing as a forward. But there's a lot of debate over, you know, coaching staff just don't like to do, you know, putting a guy on his, you know, a right-handed defender playing on the left side, which is what Larry Brooks is saying the Rangers could try to do with D'Angelo. I am of the opinion that they should try, and frankly, they should have tried it during the season, you know, this past season, because really there was no reason not to do it, in my opinion, because he wanted to have an idea of what, if this is something D'Angelo is capable of. But when you're like, you have the issue potentially of, like, I think it was Mimiko Hiro at Hockey Graphs who dug into this, and I think it was 2016. So, you know, still a relatively recent study on, you know, playing on your offhand, as a defender. And it's a trend that's gone way, way down over the years. Like, it just happens less and less often. So, but I also, in my head, I'm like, you know what? If David Quinn is willing to have Brandon Smith as a right winger, shouldn't he be open to this idea, Tom? At least on paper, but when you're talking about the transition game and getting out of your own zone, it's very nice to have guys with different handedness, right? It just creates better opportunities to break out of your own zone without forcing guys to make difficult passes. And that's something that needs consideration. But the other thing that needs consideration is, you know, the Rangers have this position of strength and they can, you know, it's not like Tony D'Angelo is going to forget how to play the right side if you ask him to play the left side. So I wish they had looked into that already. It was something I was you and I remember talking about during the season, actually, right? I don't know why we haven't seen it, but it is something to think about. Because there's something to be said there, but I remember I want to dig into the numbers more about what it actually means for the transition game. But that is another option, and you know, that Brooksy wrote about. So, good God, it's a goddamn jigsaw puzzle you're trying to put together, and every 5 minutes a toddler comes by and knocks it off the table.
Yeah, seriously. Like, my whole thing with the Rangers was they've been bad for the most part the last few years, and they've had times in the schedule where it's clear that they weren't going anywhere. I just wanted them to experiment. Like, let's try this unconventional thing. Let's see if it works. And if it works, let's try it again and again and again. And then maybe we learn something. But no, we just follow all convention. We give veterans tons of ice time. We, you know, rookies just don't play, and you know, if they do, they're on the third line. Because if you're able to answer some of these questions, then you come to the offseason and go, yeah, we really need to get rid of player X, or man, player Y can play the left side for us next year. But you know, it's annoying because you see other teams in the league do it, and then they're able to find out, oh, wow, here's a center that they're a lot better at wing, so this solves this problem for us. Now we can do this thing. But, yeah, I mean, it's immaterial in the context of right now, because they do have a lot of, at least at forward, a lot of those plots mapped out. But the defense, I think it's going to be a combination of we're going to see what they can do again. I love Ryan Lindgren, but I want to see him do it again. And, you know, preferably if he can do it without Adam Fox. And then obviously.
Yeah, because the underlying numbers on Fox is he was the best defenseman on the team. And Lindgren, of course, played a lot with him. So how much of Lindgren looking really solid was buoyed by Fox is right. A tough question.
Yeah, no disrespect to Lindgren, but if they start next season and it's Lindgren and Truba and it looks good, then like, okay, then we're learning something here.
And Ryan Lindgren is a top four, more comfortably, obviously, a second pair guy, just because he has no offensive game to speak of for the most part. But it is, like you said, I just wish, you know, it's not a bad time to throw shit against the wall, especially like, I don't know, what do we got? Phil DiGiuseppe, coming to, you know, Kratter's hurt, Zenajan's hurt, like, fucking experiment, try some things out. And it would be nice to have a little more knowledge and data to look at it to be like, all right, well, you know, we tried this, or, you know, we might have something with Tony D'Angelo being able to play the left side, or what have you, because it makes sense to ask Tony D'Angelo as opposed to the rookie Adam Fox or the Jacob Trouba who you just signed to, you know, $8 million for 7 years or whatever the hell it was. So, like, it would have been nice if they experimented with that a little bit more. Just so we don't forget to cover this, Tom, also in the world of interesting, but in this case, very good news is Vitali Kravtsov is having a very good start to his year in Russia.
Yeah, 6 goals in 10 games. He has 1 assist, but if you're following, you know, AJ Ranger on Twitter, Alex, you'll see that there's a number of situations where he's made some really good passes and his teammates have been unable to finish them. So it's not a situation of where he's just being, you know, super selfish, although he is taking a lot of shots, which is good, but he's had some really good passes that for whatever reason, his teammates are unable to finish. So, really good to see him comfortable. Really good to see him playing.
Really good to see that 5 of those 6 goals are even strength, too. And the other thing is, you know, one would say, well, what's a shooting percentage? It's 15%, so it's you know, it's a really high pace, but it's not crazy. He's not shooting 20. You know, 2 years ago when he was a kid, he shot like
7%, and last year I think it was like 10 or 11% in the brief amount of time he was in Tractor or with Tractor in the KHL. So, you know, this is something to just talk about maybe offline, Tom, but it's a pain in the ass to try and watch KHL games in the States. It's trying to find a way to do it without resorting to, shall we say, nefarious means, but I cannot find a legitimate way to do it. I don't know if any of our listeners can give me any tips, but goddamn, I found a way to do it with nefarious ways, let's say. But let's just say the back alley shenanigans. But like, I was able to watch him play in his most recent game, and he was the best part of the line he was on with Lucas Sedlak and another former NHLer, Pontus Åberg. So he is the guy getting all the points with who he's playing with, and he's leading Tractor in points. So all that is just awesome news for a guy who, frankly, I was like shitting myself. Like, this kid's confidence has to be fucked, right? Like, with how he was yo-yoed around and scratched in Hartford and everything that happened with him. And like, goddamn, I was really worried that, you know, and it still could prove to be the case, but like, just a year of his development was just burned and wasted. And as fun as the Rangers, you know, like, future offense looks like, especially at the wing, you want as many top six potential players as you can get. And you definitely want a guy like Kravtsov to pan out, just because, God, it would be fun. So, yeah, it's awesome to see him have a strong start. Elias Anderson's having a pretty strong start on a very bad HC71 team, although I think they've only just played the two games. He had a really good preseason. Again, really good news, but who the hell knows what's going to happen with Elias Anderson?
Yeah, certainly. It's something that, like we said earlier, all these hypothetical trades, it wouldn't surprise me if he's someone who's like a throw-in or a piece that you add on as an interesting thing to
a reclamation, yeah. Kind of, you know, here's a lottery ticket or magic beans. This kid could be, you know, a really, really good third-line center in the NHL, but he's going to need the right situation. And you know, I think it's very easy for an opposing GM, if you're talking to him on the phone, to be like, look, things didn't work out here, and that's a lot of that was on us, and this kid needs, you know, an opportunity, and, you know, might be getting a special player here as a guy who, like you said, might be a throw-in or something to maybe, like, sweeten the pot on a bigger deal, because it's still very hard to visualize a path forward for him within the Rangers organization that ends up in him. I still hope it'll happen. I don't think it's going to happen.
I hope so too. We only have one bannering point question this week. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before I read it to you?
No. Hit me with a question.
Yeah. So this comes from World by Mike. It should now be finally clear to the naysayers that Trouba is absolutely capable of being traded. With that said, do you think the front office is too stubborn, lost in sunk cost, or is Trouba just going to be the new Staal with his awful albatross contract?
Well, if any of those scenarios is true, it's probably the second one, is that, you know, with the loss, you know, the sunk cost here, because the other problem is who's going to take him. It's a problem the Rangers have put themselves in by not really giving Jacob Trouba not giving him an environment in which he could really succeed. But even he, you know, it's, again, you know, we have to say small sample size. We needed like a fucking soundboard thing for that, Tom, by the way. Just a wah, wah, wah. But he was really good in the playoffs in three games, but he said, you know, heading into the bubble, that he knows he had a really rough season, and he knows he can be a lot better. And all those are things you want to hear, but it still doesn't take away the fact that the first year of that contract was just, oh, God, what are we getting ourselves into here? The real problem now is who would take him? Like, I think any team would be willing to take him because anyone could be traded, and you know, that's what our listener is asking, and I think he's absolutely right. Like, any deal can be moved, and the Rangers, but like, I don't think the Rangers want to retain salary for fucking 6 years. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's a very hard contract to move.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is, I understand Truba is a little overpaid. I understand he had a disappointing first regular season. We've seen times where people are able to turn around, and I understand that the underlying numbers show that he was on a bit of a dip in Winnipeg, and obviously that continues into year one with the Rangers. I still think that there's a lot of teams out there that they do things based off of name recognition and pedigree and overall body of work. And like, when you think of like prototypical defensemen in the NHL, like Jacob Trouba, you know, checks off a lot of the boxes. You know, he's had some size. He's played, you know, internationally, has a big shot, which, you know, he's right-handed. A lot of, you know, these old timey hockey, you know, men, you know, would fawn over someone like Trouba.
He can play on the power play, even though he had a couple of younger guys kick him off the porch.
Yeah. But I think that the Rangers, they really like him. You know, he's someone that this was his first year in a situation that where his future was set. We obviously know everything that went on with Winnipeg towards the end, and obviously the situation, you know, with his fiance and everything she's doing with medical school, and just sort of settling that and having a place to live and having that security. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, obviously I understand people are frustrated, but I do think at some point, if it's a contract that is onerous for the Rangers, that when you see people like Mike Matheson was traded from Florida to Pittsburgh, and he has, obviously it's a lower cap hit, but it's, you know, it's still, I think it's 6 more years.
Yeah, very goofy contract in terms of what that player turned out to be, and just a long-term deal, and for a guy who, you know, replaced him, guy. Very interesting, though, Tom. Let me ask you this, Tom. You ready?
Yeah.
What's more likely? That Jacob Trouba is traded, or that he works a loser next year? Because to kind of tie it back to what we were talking about with the leadership group, I see Jacob Trouba as the guy the organization wants to have a letter on.
Yeah, I definitely think that he's going to have a letter next season.
Yeah. I'm going to see if you would take a bet with me. Not even a gambling man, but I would bet $20 without sweating that he would have a letter on his jersey is more likely than him being dealt.
But I
agree with that. Like, I agree. Anyone could be traded, especially right now when teams are moving money. The problem is Trouba. Like, I don't have cap friendly in front of me, but I would imagine every year he has a signing bonus. So it's not like the Rangers are, you know, in terms of the timing of trading him or anything. The window closes, and the issue here is, like I said, you don't want to be locked into 6 years of retained salary, because, like, you know, you take retained salary on the short term when you can, unless, you know, you're Toronto with Phil Kessel. But, you know, you do what you got to do. But I don't think a team would be like, yeah, let's sign a guy, you know, 8 years or 7 years, and then after the first year, let's trade him and have him half, you know, whatever percentage of his cap on our books for the next half dozen years, especially in the context of a fixed cap for the next few years. I think the odds are really fantastic. Don't get me wrong. If the Rangers could wave a wand and undo the Jacob Trouba contract, sign me up. Also, sign me up for not buying out Kevin Shattenkirk and not getting into the Jacob Trouba situation in the first place. But here we are.
So I have his deal up. So this year, he had an $8 million signing bonus.
It's a lot of money.
$2 million base salary. Next year, he has a $6 million signing bonus, $2 million base salary. And then $6 million, $8 million, $6 million, $6 million. And the last 2 years of his deal are a modified no trade. It's a 15-trade no trade list, and then it's a 12-team no trade list. So really, after the 21-22 season, all his signing bonus money has been paid, and then it's a $2 million salary,
okay.
A $6 million. So, like, the way it's structured with retention, it's reasonable that if it got to that point, it's a movable contract.
Yeah, it's true, if it gets to that point. So, yeah, that is good to know. But, you know, again, we've seen guys that have no move clauses in the last 2 years of Trouba's deal. He has, you know, a modified no trade. But, like, we've seen this happen before where trades happen that we don't think will happen. Like, I know Eric Staal certainly didn't think he would land in fucking in Buffalo, but he's probably looking around like, well, shit, here I am. That's kind of what happens, right? It's professional sports. That's why everyone and their uncle wants, you know, full no move, ironclad. They have full control over wherever the hell they end up, and yeah, it's a lot. Anyway, was there anything else we wanted to tackle, Tom?
No, I think that's about it. As always, you want to thank, you know, everyone for listening. Thank everyone who supports the Patreon. We can't, you know, put on this show without you. A 6 Foot Gap, Adam Naholik, Aiden Gaspar, Amriel Kistner, Andre Shikagov, Andy White, Anthony Loyola, Beezer, Ben Pierney, Bjarne Osterheim, Bob Kawa, Bobby Callahan, Captain America, Chris Abebe, Chris Lucas, Chris Marco Trigiano, Clark Carroll, Daniel Jazen, David L. Singer, Fancy Lawrence, Frank Menino, George Lippman, Igor Zavlosky, Jamie Bussold, Jason Silverman, Jeff Owen, Jermaine Francis, John Predzipelski, John Reppy, Jordan Sassone, Justin Walsh, Keith Franchillo, Kevin Mead, Kush Tastic, Kyle Napolitano, Matt Bader, Matt Pumpel, Matthias Olsen, Michael Kanick, Michael Marcus,
Matt
Michael
Pumple.
Silvers.
Wow.
Yeah, that patron had been, you know, Nick Antropov had been, you know, a lot of different other ones.
Matt Pumple is a name I haven't thought of in fucking 12 years or whatever the hell it's been. Matt Pumple.
Nikolai Hoffman, Panarin 2020, Patrick Landolt, Perennial Powerhouse, Sammy Vogel Seinberg, Sean, Steve Bielbach, Stink Fleeman, Tall Guy Rob, The Earl Carlson, The Tin Man, Tori from Manhattan, and Trevor Kempner. Thank you very much for all of your support.
Thank you, as always, everyone. Like Tom said, we cannot do the show without you. We know these are tough times for a lot of people, including hockey writers, in terms of, you know, making ends meet. And, you know, you only have so much money to put into things that are, you know, seen as luxuries and things that are hobbies and recreations, things you're passionate about. So it means the world to us that you square away a couple of bucks every month for us. That, you know, we say it all the time. We can never say it enough. It really does mean the world to us. So thank you all for your support, your continued support. I hope you guys got a kick out of Joe the last time we recorded. I know, whether or not we ever see him again, who knows, but he's a giant crap. And I love Tom to death. You guys are all pretty good, especially Matt Pumple.
Yeah, as always, thank you again. We have some thoughts on how we're going to proceed. Obviously, the season will be wrapping up shortly. We're going to have the draft. We're going to have free agency. And then we're going to go into holding pattern where we don't know, you know, when the next season is going to start. But, me and Mike have talked a little bit. We're going to talk some more to, you know, try and keep things fresh for everyone. So we appreciate your listenership, and we appreciate your patience. And thank you, Mike, as always, for joining me. Appreciate it. And hope you have a good rest of the day.
You too, Tom in Bahama. Goodbye, folks.
Bye, everyone. Hey.
You too, Tom in Bahama. Goodbye, folks.
Bye, everyone. Hey.
You too, Tom in Bahama. Goodbye, folks.
Bye, everyone. Hey.
You too, Tom in Bahama. Goodbye, folks.
Bye, everyone.